This is Audible.
Gray Malkin Media is proud to celebrate the 40th anniversary of The Pig Man with the release of this audiobook. First published in 1968, The Pig Man has become one of the most influential young adult books of all time, selling over 8 million copies, and has been translated into different languages all over the world. Stay tuned at the end of this book for the exclusive bonus features, including an interview with the author, Paul Zindel, in which he explains how he creates his unusual characters, what life was like growing up on Staten Island, and what it's like to be stalked by a giant man-eating lizard, among other things. And now for our feature presentation. The Pig Man by Paul Zindel. Read for you by Eden Regal and Charlie McQuaid. To the Boy and Girl of Stapleton.
The Oath. Being of sound mind and body on this 15th day of April in our sophomore year at Franklin High School.
Let it be known that Lorraine Jensen and John Conlin have decided to record the facts and only the facts about our experiences with Mr. Angelo Pignotti.
Miss Rylan, the cricket, is watching us at every moment because she is the librarian at Franklin High and thinks we're using her typewriter to copy a book report for our retarded English teacher.
The truth, and nothing but the truth, until this memorial epic is finished.
So help us God. John Conlin.
Lorraine Jensen.
Chapter 1. Now, I don't like school, which you might say is one of the factors that got us involved with this old guy we nicknamed the Pig Man. Actually, I hate school. But then again, most of the time, I hate everything. I used to really hate school when I first started at Franklin High. I hated it so much the first year they called me the bathroom bomber. Other kids got elected GO president and class secretary and lab squad captain, but I got elected the bathroom bomber. They called me that because I used to set off bombs in the bathroom. I set off 23 bombs before I didn't feel like doing it anymore. The reason I never got caught was because I used to take a tin can, that's a firecracker as if you didn't know, and mold a piece of clay around it so it'd hold a candle attached to the fuse, one of those skinny little birthday candles. Then I'd light the thing, and it'd take about 8 minutes before the fuse got lit. I always put the bombs in the first floor boys' john right behind one of the porcelain unmentionables where nobody could see it. Then I'd go off to my next class. No matter where I was in the building, I could hear the blast. If I got all involved, I'd forget I had lit the bomb, and then even I'd be surprised when it went off. Of course, I was never as surprised as the poor guys who were in the boys' john on the first floor sneaking a cigarette, because the boys' john is right next to the dean's office, and a whole flock of Gestapo would race in there and blame them. Sure, they didn't do it, but it's pretty hard to say you're innocent when you're caught with a lung full of rich, mellow tobacco smoke. When the dean catches you smoking, it really may be hazardous to your health. I smoke one with a recessed filter myself. After my bomb avocation, I became the organizer of the super colossal fruit roll. You could only do this on Wednesdays because that was the only day they sold old apples in the cafeteria. Sick, undernourished, antique apples. They sold old oranges on Fridays, but they weren't as good because they don't make much noise when you roll them. But on Wednesdays, when I knew there was going to be a substitute teaching one of the classes, I'd pass the word at lunch, and all the kids in that class would buy these scrawny apples. Then we'd take them to class and wait for the right moment, like when the substitute was writing on the blackboard. You couldn't depend on a substitute to write on the blackboard, though, because usually they just told you to take a study period so they didn't have to do any work and could just sit at the desk reading the New York Times. But you could depend on the substitute to be mildly retarded. So I'd pick out the right moment and clear my throat quite loudly, which was the signal for everyone to get the apples out. Then I gave this phony sneeze that meant to hold them down near the floor. When I whistled, that was the signal to roll them. Did you ever hear a herd of buffalo stampeding?
34 scrawny, undernourished apples rolling up the aisles sound just like a herd of buffalo stampeding. Every one of the fruit rolls was successful, except for the time we had a retired postman for General Science 1H5. We were supposed to study incandescent lamps, but he spent the period telling us about commemorative stamps. He was so enthusiastic about the old days at the PO, I just didn't have the heart to give the signals. And the kids were a little put out because they all got stuck with old apples. But I gave up all that kid stuff now that I'm a sophomore. The only thing I do now that is faintly criminal is write on desks. Like, right this minute, I feel like writing something on this nice polished table here. And since the cricket is down at the other end of the library showing some four-eyed dimwit how to use the encyclopedias, I'm going to do it. Help me! A rotten science teacher has given me a drug to change me into a teeny-weeny mosquito! Please help! Now that I've artistically expressed myself, we might as well get this cursing thing over with, too. I was a little annoyed at first since I was the one who suggested writing this thing because I couldn't stand the miserable look on Lorraine's face ever since the pigman died. She looked a little bit like a St. Bernard that just lost its keg. But since she agreed to work on this, she's gotten a little livelier and more opinionated. One of her opinions is that I shouldn't curse. Not in a memorial epic. Let's face it, I said. Everyone curses. She finally said I could curse if it was excruciatingly necessary by going like this. %$%. Now, that isn't too bad an idea because %$%% leaves it to the imagination. And most people have a worse imagination than I have. So I figure I'll go like %$%% if it's a mild curse, like the kind you hear in the movies, when everyone makes believe they're morally violated but have really gotten the thrill of a lifetime. If it's going to be a revolting curse, I'll just put a 3 in front of it, like %$%%, and then you'll know it's the raunchiest curse you can think of. Just now, I'd better explain why we call Miss Rylan the cricket. Like I told you, she's the librarian at Franklin and is letting us type this thing on her quiet typewriter, which isn't quiet at all. But there aren't many kids in 7th period study because most of them cut it and the others get excused early because our school is overcrowded. It's only kids like Lorraine and me that get stuck with 7th period study because we have to stay around for an 8th period class called Problems in American Democracy. And if you think having problems in American democracy is a fun way to end the day, you need a snug-fitting straitjacket. Anyway, Miss Rylan is a little on the fat side, but that doesn't stop her from wearing these tight skirts which make her nylon stockings rub together when she walks, so she makes this scratchy sound. That's why the kids call her the cricket. If she taught woodshop or gym, nobody'd really know she makes that sound. But she's a librarian, and it's so quiet you can hear every move she makes. Lorraine is panting to get at the typewriter now, so I'm going to let her before she has a heart attack.